2. 1. Hello. You have discovered the Felon File. Formerly known as, the 542 and the Blue Podcast. FelonFile.com is a podcast exploration and discussion of law enforcement, history, issues, and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains and elsewhere. Felon File is hosted by Scott Lunsford, retired police detective, sergeant, author and researcher. The Shade of Blue stories for Felon File today. Scott is looking once more, down under so to speak. If you recall in the podcast, episode 5-13, The Wicked Stepmother, Truth or Fiction? A Shade of Blue story of a little girl, Zara Baker. It also started in Australia. The investigation of the model murderer. Background music. Hard Boiled hosted by Purple Planet. Scott, you're online.
Well, welcome back to Felony File Podcast. As Victoria said, thank you, Victoria, for getting us started. We're a podcast look and discussion on crime and punishment incidents, police activity, history, and other things that I might find of interest, and I hope you will too. Today, we're looking once more down under. Now, if you will recall, in a previous podcast, episode 513, I believe, The Wicked Stepmother, Truth or Fiction? The tragic story of a little girl by the name of Zahara Baker, that was also started in Australia, but concluded in North Carolina. Now, our main character in today's Shade of Blue story is a gentleman by the name of Christopher Wilder. He was born in Australia in 1945. His father was an American naval officer and his mother was an Australian national. This allowed him to move without any difficulty between the United States and Australia later on in life. Now, according to the family and Wilder, he nearly died at birth and almost drowned in a swimming pool incident at the age of 2. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. On January 4th, 1963, at the age of 17, in Australia, he raped a 13-year-old girl at a beach in Sydney. He was with two other young men, both of whom denied being involved in the actual sexual assault. But Wilder was identified and arrested, and then later convicted of the offense. The Australian court sentenced him to probation and electroshock therapy, according to Wilder. Some blame the shock therapy for aggravating Wilder's violent sexual tendencies, and this includes Wilder himself. Don't know, perhaps maybe making an excuse for his activities. Later on, research and investigation by a journalist by the name of Duncan McNabb found that there is no evidence that he underwent any type of electroshock therapy, and that the story of his near drowning was an invention of Wilder himself and didn't actually happen. Now, Wilder married at the age of 23 in 1968, and for some reason, which we'll probably come to realize in just a few minutes, his wife left him after about 1 week of married life, never going back to him and staying away from him as much as she possibly could. Well, after that occurred, Wilder left Australia and started over in America. The move being very profitable for Wilder, he made millions in dealing in real estate. Now, it was while living in Florida that he became interested in photography. And making big money in the Florida real estate market allowed Wilder to concentrate on a photography hobby and unfortunately his other hobby. From about 1971 through 1975, he was charged with several sexual misconduct and sexual assault and regular assault incidents. He eventually ended up raping a young woman he had lured into his truck on the idea of photographing her for a modeling contract. Now that was to become part of his method of operation, or for getting victims. Promising that he had contacts in the modeling and glamour photography industry. Even though Wilder had several convictions along those same lines in Florida, he never served any actual behind the bars jail time for any of the convictions. Now these crimes and assaults become his drug of choice, and he began to go deeper and deeper into this type of an addiction, and his crimes escalated. Now the lack of jail time seemed to just empower Wilder. When the legal system would fail to stop him when they had the chance, Wilder got worse and worse. Wilder raped a young woman while claiming to be a respected photographer. His victim willingly climbed into his truck, expecting to be photographed for a possible modeling contract, but she was not. Being sexually assaulted and identified later and charged, he decided it was best to let things cool down, and Wilder ended up going back to Australia. Now, while visiting his parents there in Australia in 1982, Wilder ended up being charged with another sex offense, this time against two 15-year-old girls whom he forced to pose nude for his photography. His parents ended up posting bail for him after he was arrested, and he was allowed to return to Florida to await trial. But court delays prevented his case from ever being heard, as he eventually having a hearing in April of 1984, but he was slightly preoccupied at that time. After getting back to Florida in early 1984, he began his six-week cross-country crime spree. A Rosario Gonzalez, 26-year-old female who worked as a model at the Miami Grand Prix, she was last seen at the Grand Prix on February 26, 1984. Wilder was also at that particular race. He was a race car driver and owner himself and raced in the IMSA GTU class circuit in a Porsche 911. Now on March 5th, a couple of weeks later, Wilder's former girlfriend, a Miss Florida finalist, Elizabeth Keon, also went missing. Now, as of this date that we're doing the podcast, neither one of these victims or individuals' bodies have been located. Miss Florida Elizabeth Keenan's parents hired a private investigator to look into their daughter's disappearance. Now, when the private investigator and the police started comparing notes, one name seemed to keep showing up in both their notebooks. Investigators knew Wilder was in contact at some point with both women. The investigative pressure brought on by the private investigator and the efforts of the police detectives may be why Wilder went on this last run. On March 18, 1984, Wilder was in Seattle Beach, about 130 miles north from where he lived at in Florida. A 21-year-old Theresa Ferguson was convinced by Wilder to leave with him from the Merritt Square Mall in Merritt Island, Florida. He later murdered her and dumped the girl's body into an orange grove. 2 days later, Wilder showed up in Bainbridge, Georgia. Wilder's next victim was a 19-year-old Linda Grover, who was a Florida State University student. He kidnapped her from the Grosvenor Square Mall in Tallahassee, Florida, and drove her to Bainbridge. His model photography pitch did not work with her, so he just ended up snatching her from the mall parking lot. He assaulted and beat her in the parking lot, tied her hands up, and wrapped her in a blanket, and then put her in the trunk of his car. He ended up booking a motel room in Georgia where he raped the victim, and in some kind of sick experimentation or fixation that Wilder had, he glued her eyes shut. He applied copper wires to her feet and watched her while he ran electricity through them. Now, the victim's screams ended up attracting attention, of course, from the guests in the other rooms. Now, the attention brought the police, and that, of course, forced Wilder to run, and he disappeared before the police arrived. The unfortunate young lady was actually lucky in the sense that she was able to escape with her life, considering his track record. But there, of course, is no telling what mental scars she came away with and still carries to this day. Wilder next showed up in Beaumont, Texas on March 21st of 1984. And he used the same ploy, "I'm a photographer, let me make you a fashion model star." Used that ploy again, and a young lady, a Miss Terry Walden, 23-year-old wife, mother, and nursing student, was approached. Though she was not interested in being photographed or interested in becoming a model, she disappeared 2 days later. She was found in a canal in Texas on March 26, 5 days later. Wilder had stolen her Mercury Cougar and then crossed state line into Oklahoma. That same day he arrived in Oklahoma, he abducted a 21-year-old Suzanne Logan once more at a mall, the Penn Square Mall in Oklahoma City. Driving his new victim in a stolen car, Wilder took her 180 miles north to Kansas, crossing another state line. There he took a room in another hotel next to the interstate. The next morning he drove to the Milford Reservoir in Junction City, Kansas, where he stabbed the poor girl to death and dumped her body under a cedar tree. Now, at this point, we know Wilder had murdered 5 women in 3 different states that we're positive of. Leaving Kansas, Wilder drove on to Colorado. Wilder now appeared to be getting bolder in his activities and his crimes. He met an 18-year-old Cheryl Bonaventura in Grand Junction, Colorado on March 29th. Again, less than a week after the last killing. The pair were together at a diner in Silverton, Colorado, or that's where they were seen, and being more comfortable with his activities or just getting sloppy, Wilder held several conversations with people at the restaurant. He told his waitress that the two of them were heading for Las Vegas with a stop in Durango. Now, on March 30th, the next day, it was documented by photographs that the two were seen in the Four Corners Monument area. Now, afterwards, he ended up renting a room for the two of them at a Page Boy Motel in Page, Arizona. A day or so later, Wilder shot and stabbed the 18-year-old Cheryl to death near a river in Utah. Her body was not discovered or identified until May 3, 1984. Chris did, though, make it to Las Vegas, and it was in Vegas that he met a 17-year-old Michelle Kaufman. And it is in Vegas that he met 17-year-old Michelle Kaufman. Now, Michelle was actually involved with some modeling work for real, and when she met Wilder, was taking part in a 17 magazine cover model competition photo shoot at the Meadows Mall in Las Vegas. After she met Wilder, she disappeared. Now, being this type of event, there actually were quite a few other photographers at the competition, and Wilder was actually caught on film several times stalking and watching the 17-year-old young lady at this particular mall event. Her body was found a month later near a California roadside rest stop, and it took almost another month before she was identified by dental records. Now, the connections were being made between Wilder and the missing and murdered girls. Police agencies started sharing information, and because it was a multi-state investigation, the FBI became involved. And soon Wilder was put on the Federal Bureau of Investigation's 10 Most Wanted Fugitives list. Wilder was appearing to be outthinking his pursuers and seemed to be getting away with the murders. And the reality of the situation was he was just actually constantly moving and changing locations. A moving target is much harder to hit. That is, unless you lead it. And that is what law enforcement started doing. The next documented location for Wilder, the murder killer, was Torrance, California, where he ended up connecting with a 16-year-old Tina Rysko. Tina agreed to be photographed, and that's when he abducted her and raped her. Now, deciding to adapt his methods, he kept Tina alive and took her with him as he headed east through New Mexico, Gary, Indiana, Prescott, Arizona, Joplin, Missouri, and Chicago. And there are possibilities that were looked at and that are suspected that Wilder had victims in these locations as well. Wilder thought that he could use Tina to help him by luring victims to him. The photography model plan was getting kind of well known, and young women were being enlightened to this method. And that and the fact that a lot of other bad guys were using the same method for rapes and robberies. Now, while in Maryville, Indiana, Wilder did make a mistake. Tina helped Chris Wilder abduct a Donette Wilt, 16 years old, at a local mall. Wilder raped Wilt several times in the car's back seat as Tina drove the car to New York. In Pennsylvania, in a wooded area, Wilder took Wilt and tried to suffocate her before stabbing her twice and leaving her to die. After Wilder and Tina left, the badly injured 16-year-old girl made a tourniquet and bandages out of her jeans to stop or slow the bleeding. Making her way to the road, she was able to attract the attention of a truck driver by the name of Charlie Lawson. He, in fact, saved the girl's life by getting her to the hospital quickly. Now, she survived and told the police that Wilder had mentioned that they were on their way to Canada. Continuing his methods, at Eastview Mall in Victor, New York, Wilder ended up forcing a 33-year-old Beth Dodge into a car and again had Tina follow him in the Pontiac Firebird. After a short drive, Wilder shot Beth and dumped her body in a gravel pit. Taking the Firebird, Wilder and Tina drove to the Logan Airport in Boston. For some reason, he ended up buying her a ticket to Las Vegas to get her back home. Wilder told her that she would make a lot of money when she wrote a book about the experiences in the kidnapping. Now, on April 13th, Wilder tried to pull off one more abduction. He offered a young woman a ride to a gas station, but she refused. And Wilder tried to force her into his car, but she fought him and was able to escape. A couple of hours later, Wilder found himself at Vic Getty's service station in Colebrook, New Hampshire. The information on the attempted abduction, the suspect vehicle, and the good possibility that it was Wilder was put out to local law enforcement departments in the area and the surrounding states, trying to lead the target. two New Hampshire state troopers, a Leo Jelson and Wayne Fortner, noticed the Firebird in the parking lot of the gas station. The officers parked and approached the vehicle where Wilder was at. Wilder immediately went back to the Firebird and armed himself with a Colt Python 357 Magnum. While one trooper kept Wilder's attention on him, the other moved behind him and attempted to jump Wilder from behind, and they got into a scuffle. Two shots ended up being fired. The first bullet hit Wilder and exited through his back and into Jelson. The second bullet hit Wilder in the chest. Wilder quickly died from the injury to his heart. The trooper was seriously wounded, but he did recover and did return to full duty. And it's interesting that Wilder was shot with his own .357. The coroner officially listed the death as an accident, if you say so. The aftermath: Chris Wilder was 39 years old at the time of his death. He left an estate of more than $7 million. That's what he got from his real estate workings. In June of 1986, a court-appointed arbitrator ruled that the after-tax balance was to be divided among the families of his victims. At this point, we know for positive that he murdered 8 women in 6 states, but they figure that he may be responsible for at least 10 more, but they can't prove it. The bodies of Elizabeth Keon and Rosario Gonzalez have never been located. Tina has not spoken much about Chris Wilder in that period of her life. She did say that she survived because she had been hardened by a childhood of sexual assault herself, mother's association with biker gang members. At one point, Tina did speak in an interview of the time that Wilder brought her the plane ticket to Los Angeles and her freedom. Quote, "He knew he was close to being killed, and he didn't want me to die with him. He told me to kiss him on the cheek, and he said, 'All you got to do, kid, is write a book.'" Today, Tina would be about 53 years old, and she has almost no internet footprint that I was able to find, at least not under her original name. And it's not surprising that due to all the publicity that happened, that she might have changed her name or has gotten married since then. Now, that's our Shade of Blue story for today: the crime spree and aftermath of Chris Wilder. 39 years old at the time of his death, died from a wound from his own pistol while trying to wrestle and get away from a New Hampshire state trooper. Thank you for listening. If you have thoughts on this podcast and would like to share them, you can contact us, Victoria and I, through the felonfile.com webpage, or just email us directly at felonfile@gmail.com. And of course, you can also reach us through scottlunsfordauthor.com, where you can check out some of my books. And if you would be interested in a copy of my books, the fiction and nonfiction works I have, you can find them at Amazon, amazon.com, and Barnes & Noble as well. Now, don't forget also to check out our stuff page on the website. You can pick up a Felon File t-shirt or a coffee mug. Nothing freaks your coworkers out better than having your morning coffee in a Felon File coffee mug. Always fun. If you got a good idea for a Shade of Blue podcast you'd like us to research, you can drop me or Victoria a line. We'd love to hear from you. You can also support Felon File podcast by buying Victoria or myself a coffee from the link on the website down at the bottom of the page. That helps defray some of the expenses for getting copies of court records and other information that we use in the Felon File podcast when we are researching our Shade of Blue stories. And it allows us to keep us pretty much commercial free. Felon File is a hobby podcast, And we're trying to keep it as uncommercial as possible, except for buying our coffee mugs and t-shirts. That's okay. Now, in the coming weeks, please try to be safe and be secure in what you do. And don't let the shade of blue stories frighten you from doing good things and trying to help other people. It's always good to try to do something nice for someone. It's still the right thing to do, not only for ourselves and other people, but for our community as well. We'll see you next Saturday on the Felon File podcast. Next Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, United States time. Bye, y'all.
You have been listening to the Felon File podcast with your host, Scott Lunsford. For more information on this podcast or Scott's books and writings, go to scottlunsfordauthor.com and felonfile.com. Scott can also be contacted at these web pages. This is Victoria, your producer. Thank you for listening. 2-1. N. I almost forgot. If you would like to support the Felon File podcast, please go to buymeacoffee.com/felonfile. Here you can buy Scott a cup of coffee or help purchase some of the research material and expenses that it takes to do Felon File. That's buymeacoffee.com/felonfile. Once more, thank you for listening.